Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, Inc., based in Southern California near San Diego.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative, just outside of New York City in Montclair, New Jersey.
Well, Happy New Year. This is our first episode that'll air at the start of 2017. It's a great start to the year with a presentation episode the very first week. And aside from the holiday fun things that have been happening, what's exciting in the project world?
I've got some speech coaching coming up in a few weeks that I do with a friend. I don't do it all that often. I don't get to do it all that often. So every chance, every time a client calls, I take the opportunity.
And that's really cool.
Yeah, we do a fairly intensive full day thing with only a few people that a partner and I do. And it's good to work with friends too. That's one of the reasons that I do it as well.
That's awesome. Is that like for a specific company or an opening for like a, I mean, is it a?
Yeah, it's a 2 day. It's going to be a 2 day training for a specific company. So they'll bring in a few people one day, then a few people the next. And
I know a lot of companies I could say need that. They won't admit it, but I know some executives who would benefit.
It's funny. It doesn't always happen, but in this case, I had actually done some training for this company, some presentation training a while back. And then they basically got to where they could get, and then they realized, oh, okay, well, this is good. We're making better slides and better presentations, but we're not giving them very well. So they called back and sure.
That's a great progression. Awesome.
It's funny. I was just going to say when Nolan first started talking, I thought he said speed coaching,
and
I
just didn't know what that.
I didn't know what is that fast coaching. You know, let's get done in a minute, 60 seconds, and see what you can do. It's an interesting model.
Yes, I'm also a personal trainer for the U.S. Olympic team.
There you go. I'm heading into another conference, January, at the end of January, for one of my clients. That will be in Minneapolis. I have another exec keynote that I'm working on, and that'll be delivered at the Kellogg's Leadership Conference at the end of this month.
Well, that's awesome. I so identify. December was so wonderfully light, at least on the number of travel or on-site projects. But that changes starting with the first week of January. I'm in Phoenix. Actually, the week when this will air, I'll be in Phoenix, followed by projects in Miami and Orlando for me. January is like you. It's conference season. Just went back into full swing or corporate meetings. Because we are recording this episode a bit ahead of schedule because of holiday plans for all of us, we don't have anything that'll be extremely timely on the news. But I do have a personal news item, if you'll indulge me. And it is industry news. My blog, thepowerpointblog.com, just turned 11 this week. My first blog post, I looked back on it. I'm actually reposted it on January 1st of this year, but my first blog post was January 1st, 2006, so 11 years ago.
What was the topic?
It's actually a picture of me holding my daughter, which is why I reposted it, because she doesn't – I don't think I could put her on my shoulders now, or she would let me.
That's cute.
So it was just a, hey, I'm going to do this announcement. It was announcing, hey, I'm going to do this just because I think it's something that's needed and something I want to do. So the topic was very much just an announcement.
Nice.
So when Facebook began, I was not one of the early adopters. I got bribed into it by actually the PowerPoint MVPs. It's a whole other story. But they wouldn't give me any photos unless I got onto it and got them from there. Everyone was pretty much excited on Facebook just to read what others were posting. Now, if a post doesn't have a photo in it, you most likely skip over it. And soon, if it hasn't already happened, if it does not have a video or something in motion, we're just going to skip over that too. Video is the new medium for visual communication. And luckily for presentation designers, PowerPoint has great video capabilities, something I have always been excited about and made use of. Today, we're not talking about just video playback, but what editing and video creation can be done directly in PowerPoint. So what's some of the creative ways we can use video directly in PowerPoint?
Well, I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on video being as important as maybe it was, but maybe we can circle back to that. We're going to talk because of course it's important, but in my sort of world of simplicity, faster, you know, less time to read things, I actually think video, at least in sort of the social realms, is not as important as people think. I think imagery in and of itself is obviously quicker to read, but maybe we can get into that later. But let's talk specifically about sort of technical in with regards to PowerPoint.
Well, let's start with modifying a video. Let's talk about how we can do that now in PowerPoint, when years ago we had no options. We couldn't even embed a video. Let's talk about the things that we can do in PowerPoint.
Perfect.
Okay? Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, technically you can add shadows, reflections, color correct, brightness, you can do color overlay. Basically, most of the things you can do with a photo, you can now do to video. And of course, it wasn't always the case, but it's a pretty robust editor these days.
I think that's going to be a recurring theme, is that you couldn't do it, but you can, just showing the evolution of the program. But I think cropping the visible area of a video and trimming, or, you know, saying the in and out point, are amazing tools, things you can do directly in PowerPoint that in years past had to go to an external video editor to do. And now it's just common day. Anybody can do it if they have PowerPoint.
And that's the same for poster frames. In the old days, we had to adjust, go into a video editing tool to set a poster frame, a starting frame. Right now, if a video comes to me with a blank start, I can find any still, I can lift any still, I guess, from, or any frame from the video and set that as my poster, my starting frame.
Do you do that a lot so that in a printout, it's always like people reading it, at least have, you know, instead of a black slide, or sometimes the first frame isn't really...
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't really say what the video is. So I'll go find a frame that, you know, everybody will recognize as, oh, that's that video.
Exactly why I do it.
And you can set fade-ins and fade-outs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
As well, awesome. Which is really nice.
Okay, so... What are, so kind of staying with this theme, what are some examples of us using those styling effects?
Well, you'd mentioned cropping, and yes, you can crop a video to fit into a heart shape if you really want to. I don't have never done that. I don't think I would. But one of the quick things I use cropping for is just to trim off a little bit of static or other noise on the edge of a video that often seems to be there. Like there'll be a little black space or white space or a little like, you know, static noise. You can just trim that up, you know, a centimeter, a couple centimeters, and take it completely out.
So you've all seen this, videos in the social media realm where they're shot vertically instead of horizontally, correct?
Oh, like on the phone.
Yeah, on the phone, exactly.
And yeah, when are phone manufacturers going to set it so that you cannot record vertically?
I know it. Well, last year, and this started last year for a project for a keynote, someone was getting a big award and they asked family members to record their own videos rather than sending production crews out. And even though they instructed everybody to film it on their phones horizontally, we got a bunch of vertical. Another trend in social media is when they are doing that, when you're portraying a video vertically, you've seen it where they crop the back, they crop a still from the video and place that in the background extra large. And then the video lays on top of that still, and I put a big drop shadow on that video so it's bouncing off the background.
Yeah, SportsCenter, ESPN stuff, they do that technique a lot.
And you can use that background can be a video too. It doesn't have to be a still. So you can have a video playing on a video that can get pretty nice. Crazy. But the drop shadow, I guess, to the point of what kind of effects we add, I'll add that drop shadow to make sure that it pops off the background.
So you can apply a blur to a video?
Oh, no, I'll blur. Yeah. Oh.
You can, actually.
You can?
Oh.
Oh, wait, you know what? Ooh. A blur to a photo, yes. Yes. I don't know if I've ever blurred a video.
Yeah, good point.
I don't think you can.
Test that.
I think we're all opening up PowerPoint right
now.
Doing a little test.
That's
you
funny.
Could put an overlay on it to sort of ghost it back.
Yeah, I've got the video right here, and I'm selecting it. No,
not yet.
You cannot do that yet.
Ah, okay. So, see, like they we do said, have things most to work artistic on effects.
Yeah.
Well, most I actually would like effects. The blur effect modified. I'm not. I have some suggestions, or have had some suggestions on using that one.
Well, Troy, tell us what effects
cropping.
You-
You know what? Yeah. So styling effects, I like to use, I mean, cropping, I'll just stick with that because that's just an amazingly painless thing to do in PowerPoint. It actually is much more difficult in video editing because video editing wants to look at the aspect ratio and the sizing and do some computations. And there's a lot more math involved in PowerPoint. It just says, fine. But the easiest way, I think, to kind of verbally give an example is more along the lines of what you're saying, Nolan, is, you know, when you get a lot of times you get that news, you get a news element like, hey, here's the CEO doing the ringing of the bell, the NASDAQ bell. Well, yeah. The CNN ticker type thing is running along the bottom. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily want that in your video or in your presentation, especially when it's from a year or so ago. You can just select it, crop, move it up, and it's gone. I think a bigger use for that. And I did a lot of training and a lot of demonstration of this is for medical presentations and the ability to crop out HIPAA information, like the patient name and info. Mm-hmm. I think that is that tool. Every time you show it to somebody that has an industry or they want to where they need to protect confidential information, it's like an amazing eye opener. Like, oh, my gosh, this is phenomenal. So, I mean, I know a lot of doctors, very high level surgeons that we work with, and they kind of became amateur video editors just so that they could take their content out. And as soon as you start showing them how they can do it in PowerPoint, it was like revolutionary. I think cropping is a great tool. And I think it's used all the time.
Are they recording their surgeries?
I do a lot of heart surgeon conferences. Mm-hmm. And I will say the pediatric heart surgeons in the world are some of the nicest people you'll ever meet. But yeah, they actually endoscopic video work of showing like a stent being put in place is a pretty common thing. And but you know, all those things capture when the surgery occurred, who the patient was, a lot of stuff you just can't give out per HIPAA, which is medical industry regulation on confidentiality. But yeah, cropping is a styling effect, and it is awesome.
You know, I saw somebody just about cropping. I saw somebody do something once where they cropped a video into like these slices. So it was a really thin vertical slice or horizontal slice on the slide. And it just ended up being an abstract moving item on the page.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, you can crop a video to just a few pixels wide or up and down.
Yeah. Yeah. They made like a VersaTube effect, which is.
Yeah, whatever that is. That's a-
yeah. It's kind of an abstract way of doing it. You know, I actually have when you mention that, though, I have a whole other example. My high school daughter did this really creative video where she videoed herself in three positions. So she was all three characters. And then she just dropped the videos into PowerPoint, cropped them so that they actually stood side by side. So she actually interacted with herself. You know, you see it in television
shows. That's cool. That's
she
great.
Did, she set up a tripod, record, you know, with the same background, had the chairs in place or the little props, did a recording. And then she actually edited it in PowerPoint. So she put the three together, sliced it. She paused them and then exported the whole thing as a video. It was a really, really cool idea. Again, just using the video capabilities of PowerPoint enabled a high schooler to kind of replicate what they see on TV as a very high level production. So Nolan, I know that you and I both have used Keynote, and we should probably mention a few of the capabilities of Keynote because, well, it's had video longer than anything. Yeah.
You know, I think last podcast we mentioned that we feel like Keynote is still kind of the same program it was 10 years ago. And I think, Keynote has always handled video really, really well. And that was one of the reasons I ran to it sort of initially. Because it, to me, and I still think to this day, it handles video a little more seamlessly. I mean, in Keynote, I can pause a video frame or just start, you know, on that first frame and then hit play. And there's no stutter. There's no, blink. It's just, it's seamless. And there's no, you know, blur on sort of the frame, pause. And again, I know PowerPoint has gotten much, much better, but there definitely used to be, and I still feel now and then, like when you start a video, there tends to be that little like flutter occasionally now and
then.
There
can be, yeah.
Yeah. And in Keynote, there's just none of that. So we would do things in Keynote, like we'd have full frame video and we would basically, we'd split the video up over multiple slides, and we'd just basically end the slide, end the video on one slide, and then, you know, have content come up and then go to the next slide that picked up in the next frame. Yes. And you wouldn't notice anything. It would literally be seamless. So it just looked like a photo background when it was actually video.
It was reliable. I know, well, Keynote had the advantage of leveraging the Mac OS video playback and encoding features because the Mac OS was a little more progressive and put those things directly into it. So it is supported video playback and export for, well, we'll just say many years, and it was always reliable. PowerPoint has continuously improved its video features. I would say that I am always confident with video in Keynote and Prezi even as another software out there for video playback. For PowerPoint, I am always confident if like the TLC team is the one that optimized or checked the video, embeds it, and sets the playback options. If it's not, I kind of want to go check it because I'm not confident.
Now, Troy, with a lot of the shows you do, you very often don't even play video out of PowerPoint, right? I mean, you'll go to another source.
Yeah. We usually use an external a whole separate department. Video playback is run usually through the Mac Playback Pro. Again, another software taking advantage of that whole video playback built into the operating system.
And I haven't done nearly as many live shows as you, but I remember years ago, because we were using Keynote, and we would go into a situation and the production crew would say, oh, well, you know, give me your videos. We're going to want to play those separately and not out of PowerPoint. And I said, no, we're playing it out of Keynote. And they said, oh, there's going to be problems. And there weren't. And they were amazed because they didn't know Keynote that well at how great a playback machine it was. I mean, we sometimes would have like 7 or 8 videos playing simultaneously on a Keynote slide. Not a problem.
Well, sometimes there's like a stutter or a hiccup. There's a couple of reasons for that from my perspective. And a lot of it has to do with the computer being used. There are integrated graphics cards. There are dedicated graphics cards. There are computers that have not enough RAM or too many programs going. So the computer itself can be a factor in how fast that video can play, especially in Windows.
You think it's this processor. I mean, the system.
Yeah, I think – so again, the Mac operating system just made that easy. Windows and PowerPoint have caught up. But here was one of the problems with playback is that it depends on the computer being used because Windows has a huge range from very, very – we'll say low end to very, very robust and high end. And PowerPoint runs on all of them. But, you know, you have dedicated graphics memory cards, you have shared memory cards, you have computers that have way too many processes and applications running. And up until Windows 10, so everything prior to Windows 10, the video was actually handed off to an external video player. So there was this oftentimes a visible pause while that external video player loaded up, ran and started the video. I mean, we're now fast forwarding to Windows 10. So Mac has always done this, but Windows 10, if you don't know, basically has an MP4 video playback engine built into the operating system. It's part of the core kernel, I guess you'd say, which is what kind of like what the Macs always had. So videos play so much better, especially if they're MP4 or the legacy WMV, because it's built into the operating system. In essence, it just happens. Kind of like what Mac was, isn't. So yeah, there's a lot of technical reasons why it wouldn't work in the past, and the combination of the OS and the program, PowerPoint combining.
I mean, they're buffering issues too, which we don't have to get into all the.
Yeah, and again, that'd be more of the video card and you know how the video is rendered.
You mentioned Prezi, and Prezi actually does also play video very, very well. And for one client, I was doing year after year sales presentations for them, and then they wanted these sales presentations to go into iPads to take into the field. And we moved away from PowerPoint when they started to want to use video because PowerPoint on the iPad wasn't good enough. It didn't play the video well enough, and Prezi did it beautifully. Of course, once PowerPoint got better on the iPad, now we're we're off of Prezi.
That was very short-lived. I didn't go to Prezi, but I went to other add-ins.
I would definitely say that Prezi I never had a question of if the video would play. It's just it works really, really perfectly. So PowerPoint's good. Sandy, do you use Keynote on the Mac?
I've always been a PowerPoint first gal. My clients have never been on Keynote. There was that one little glitch period of time where they were all excited about the iPad, and I had to do some backflips, but it worked out just fine. You remember the old days when we couldn't embed a video. We had to link it. We had to make sure that it tested on the production computer before. It was awful. And today, of course, I still do my checks. But I have 90% confidence that a video is going to play for me no matter where I send it.
What did the percentage used to be?
Five.
Opposite.
Yeah, opposite, it was 10%. Five. It was awful. It was awful. And with the clients, I don't have the show schedule that you have, Troy. With the clients that I work with, I get to spec the kind of equipment that will be used.
That's so, always a good thing.
Yes. So I am pretty lucky in that. Okay, I'm working in PowerPoint 2016. I'm going to be using MP4s. I'll send the video as a backup in the show file just in case. Mm-hmm. But it's always embedded in the PowerPoint for me.
Oh, yeah. We should mention that. You can link or embed video, right? And we recommend embedding.
Embed.
I embed. Oh, yeah.
Because I guess we really shouldn't talk too much about the past, but you used to have to link the video.
Well, there
right?
might be people who are still doing that. So when linked, then you had to package it in a folder, you had to zip the folder, you had to send the whole folder, and then you had to give them the instructions for relinking it just in case it broke. And oh my gosh.
I'm just staying quiet because it's bad memories.
All right. let's talk a little bit about trim, because I think that's something Keynote always had, PowerPoint added later, being able to set the endpoints, basically the in and out. And that to me is like the biggest thing, the biggest reason somebody would have to go to an outside editor, because you get a 3-minute video, you only need to show 30 seconds. So you guys use that all the time, right?
I don't use it all the time. No, I've started to recently, but when it first came out, it wasn't reliable. And so I continue to use my video editing tools.
Really? Is it and still you're discovering?
No. I'm quite confident with it now, but I don't do it a lot because I'm just starting to get to gain that confidence again. It used to be when you trimmed it, if you sent it to somebody who did not have the same version you were on, the video would not play.
Right. And that actually, and I'm not excusing PowerPoint, but explaining that because like most photo effects and other effects in PowerPoint, it's non-destructive. So you don't really get rid of that video, which I think a good thing, because if you're like, oh, actually I need that opening, then you just move the slider back and it's back. Whereas if you edit it in an outside video editor, it is what it is.
Well, there's actually, and this is probably something you encountered, Sandy, with the backwards compatibility is it actually did break it apart, Nolan, in a few instances. It still does. So here's the scenario. And I had a few projects basically explode in file size. You're like, okay, the video's optimized, but how did I go from 200 megs to like a gig? This is bad. And here's maybe a good tip thing is if you don't know it. So we'll use a video a lot of times. We'll get like a commercial reel. Here's all our commercials. We'll just drop them in and we'll trim to the commercial that's being talked about at that point. And then we'll, reference the same video and we'll trim to the next commercial. So we only have one video, but it's used on multiple slides and shows different segments. That's just one example. If you use PowerPoint's optimize features and you optimize the videos, it takes all the trimmed videos. Instead of referencing one video, it breaks them into individual videos. So you can, instead of having – so if I have – a commercial reel, because this is my example, with five commercials, and I'm only going to use four of them, but on four different slides, I just basically have the same exact video, and I just set different trim in and out points, and it's awesome. If you use the optimize, it actually gets even more funky. It creates many versions of the video. It creates all the individual trimmed versions, and it still keeps the full version kind of hidden in the background there. It's not even being used, but it's there. So suddenly you can end up with a lot of video files.
I had no idea.
No, I didn't either.
Good to know.
Yes. And I find is one of those reasons.
But it does not do that to photos, or does it?
Photos is very similar. Yeah, when you look inside of it, there's actually
does it for artistic effects, not for cropping, I don't think.
Oh, no. Cropping, it does not. No, artistic effects, it creates kind of a secondary version in it. And when you, so it can create a little bit higher file size from that.
I was going to say, for a while I was having trouble with using both trim and fade in, fade out.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That it wouldn't do both. Is that still an issue?
It's still an issue.
Okay.
Because the fade in, fade out,
one or the other,
to my knowledge, only understands the zero point and the end point. It doesn't know how to handle the trimmed points. I don't actually use the fade in, fade out often. I fake it with an animation. Mm-hmm. Right. So I'll set the trim and then I'll set an animation to fade in the video instead of, and then fade out. the video at the last frame, so it's not quite as elegant, but I don't use the fade in, fade out much. But I do use the trim all the time, Sandy. I've had very, I'd say I use it quite often. I also use the same exact trim feature in audio files. You can trim, set the in and out points, which is, again, another just awesome multimedia thing to do right in PowerPoint.
It's come such a long way. So another big issue with PowerPoint is the way that it sets up the playback animation on inserted videos. Troy, at the presentation summit in October, you had an awesome explanation of this in your PowerPoint video talk. Can you summarize it for us here?
So please? I am not a fan of the way PowerPoint works right now. And I think it's a pretty easy fix and it should come out. So here's the story. Back in PowerPoint 2003, if everybody has been there, when you inserted a video, which was only a linked element, let's just clarify, it wasn't a good option at that point. But when you added it, you got this dialogue that came up and it basically gave you a choice on animation settings. On your animation settings. And it was kind of a yes, no question. You had to figure out how to interpret it. But it basically said, do you want this video to start on the next animation click or do you want it to start on a trigger animation, which means you actually have to move your mouse or your finger and, you know, touch the video to get it to play. And I don't think 90%+ of the people want a trigger animation, in my opinion, from the presentations I see, and I see plenty. But in the transition to PowerPoint 27, that option and dialogue was removed to make it more streamlined. And everything went to the trigger animation. That was decided as here's the option. So now every video insert is set up as a trigger animation. It's not really what I think people expect or even know how to work with. And I work with this all the time with clients. If they insert the video, if we insert it, we just go ahead and set it up the way we want, which is to automatically play when the slide comes up or to start playing on the next animation click within a sequence. What do you think about that?
I mean, we've talked about this with Microsoft plenty. And is the reason they went to that because of touch? And that it makes more sense if you're presenting on a tablet.
I personally think that somebody involved with the touch interface for PowerPoint had a bigger voice than somebody that did not.
But
and that's what they coded. I don't think there was a rationale.
Even that it doesn't make sense because you're still advancing. You still have clicks to advance to the next slide. And I mean, we see it all the time. Like somebody brings up a slide and then they have to get out the mouse to navigate to play. It makes zero sense.
It doesn't work for anybody that's on a stage because they don't have a mouse. Everything is they get a clicker to advance. They don't have a mouse itself.
But if you don't have a clicker, then you just hit the space bar or you hit the arrows. Yeah. It's just if you want to play that video, I mean, it's valid to have that capability if, for example, you have like four videos up and you ask the audience, hey, which one do we want to play first? And then you can sort of navigate to that. But that shouldn't be a default. That should be it.
And you know what? I will say, and Sandy will probably agree with this. I actually, in very recent presentations, don't even do that option anymore. I use, oh my goodness, Sandy, what's our new custom slideshow tool?
Zoom.
I use Zoom now. I set up a Zoom grid so that they click it. It does this really elegant fly up, but that way the video is full frame on a hidden slide so everybody knows it's there. And I actually have gotten away from even doing trigger animations in that respect. I've used Zoom in the last few that I've done in that scenario.
A nice little, you kind of mentioned full frame. There is a little checkbox for any video to play full frame, which is
That's a nice thing.
So if you want it to be a small little thumbnail, but then play full frame, all you have to do is...
Do you like that?
It jumps. It's pretty staggering. Jumpy.
I'm not a fan of it because it basically goes, it's like animation appear. Nobody does appear because it just is jarring to the audience.
Yeah, jarring.
So full
That's
frame
the word.
Goes boom. But I also don't like... I actually discourage people from using that because in a printout, people don't see that it's going to be a full frame video. And I have had many presenters who just review stuff suddenly get startled with, whoa, that's big. And you hear it from stage like, oh, that's an unprofessional comment.
You know, what I used to do in Keynote a lot was do an animation that you would start. And I think you can do this in PowerPoint now. It would be a grow animation essentially. So we'd start a video and it might even be like in a frame taking up most of the page. We'd start playing it. Then after a few seconds, it would slowly fill the whole frame, which was was kind of a nice design thing, I thought.
The nicest thing about that is the video is actually playing. You can do like the zoom effect, but the video isn't playing during the transition time period. And you can do, but you can do a grow shrink and it'll go, but I think it's like pictures where
oh, you know, you can
it, it
also,
doesn't
Yeah.
It doesn't render
it. You can also do a transparency animation to a video, but I don't think you can set transparency on a video itself.
No.
And that is actually something you can do in Keynote, and that is something that I've done. I've used videos as very subtle backgrounds, like by playing with the transparency.
Yes.
And then even layering videos on top of each other, which is very cool.
Microsoft, are you listening? That is a huge design thing.
So we're talking about playback and the complexity that it is to set your playback preferences. I agree with you. 90% of the, in my case, 90% of the presenters I work with can't be tied to a computer to click on the screen when they're presenting. For those of you who don't understand what we're talking about, when a video is on the screen, you have to, the way the default is set, you have to move your mouse, click on the screen to get it to play. That's
while
by default.
While in slideshow.
While in slideshow. Thank you. Okay.
And that's the default behavior when you insert
default.
A video.
Right. Yes. You have to take a lot of extra steps if you want it, your presenter to be able to advance, click advance on their remote and it play the video. To do that, you have to go into your playback, select the video, go into your video playback tab, and then you have to change your video start to automatically. Then you have to open your animation tab and your animation pane and change the timing of your video to start on click.
And that's a minute of your life wasted.
Yeah.
Yep.
I actually say it this way, Sandy, because I think the video tab itself is confusing. I tell people just go right to the animation and delete the animation.
Oh.
So there is no trigger. And then they just click the play button and it puts it in there on click automatically.
Yeah, that's what
That's smart.
So
that's smart.
Delete and add. So it really bothers people. Like, why should I delete this? I'm like, because it was done wrong.
It's easier to
start over.
Hey, let's talk. What about file format, Sandy? What do you use? WMVs or MP4s? We had already kind of talked a little bit about that.
In the old days, it was a lot of their AVI and there was another one. I cannot remember what it was. But then WMVs, legacy WMV has always played well, so I've always used that. Now in 2013 and 2016, they handle MP4 files so well. I think it's the best case for everyone. The file size is smaller. They play beautifully. Troy, you can speak to this better than I can. The staggering, the jumping that Nolan complained about, I think that is minimized by using an MP4 file.
Absolutely. Well, WMV, Windows Media Video, is the legacy format that all Windows computers recognize. You could do it on a Mac if they had Flip for Mac, a free little add-in. So I used to recommend that just because I knew it would work on both platforms. It's not the highest quality.
Right.
It definitely has some, like in gray to black gradations, it's just really banded and kind of lower quality. I recommend MP4 across the board. I mean, we've used MP4 for a long time. It's recognized on the Mac system. It's recognized on Windows. It's even recognized on Linux. All web pages recognize it. But in addition, with the combination of, if you're on PowerPoint 2016 and you're on Windows 10, you should definitely use MP4 because MP4, as I kind of referenced earlier, it's a built-in playback codec in the operating system. So it plays flawlessly. It's just really good to use. Now, there are a lot of variations to it, and there's some things that can kind of get you. But I think MP4 is the best thing to use.
But if somebody is still on 2010, you need a WMV, right?
You can use the MP4, but they need to have the QuickTime player installed. So Apple QuickTime player will actually be the, because 2010 is going to offload the video to some video player. It can be the QuickTime player. It's free. You just got to make sure it's always updated, and that's what to use. It's just complicated, but I still recommend that.
Yeah. So, I mean, so even using MP4s, occasionally I'll still have some playback performance problems. And I think, you know, it's a lot, often it's hardware too, but the way a video is encoded, I mean, even if you're doing MP4, like there's still a billion ways to encode a video, right? And a different, you know, a bunch of different options and everything. And again, Troy, you can probably speak to this, but I've found sometimes I'm getting sent, you know, super high res videos from video editors who are sending me like a 2 gig video file for a 30-second, you know, spot or something because it's got to, you know, play on a, you know, in Times Square or whatever. Like it's got to, you know, gotta be super high quality. So we always have to down res them, and that's where it gets.
There are so many ways to optimize. It's just like, because most people are more familiar with JPEGs or ping images, you know, there's a lot of settings you do to optimize them for use. For, as example, for a normal widescreen presentation, we use 1920 by 1080 as a pixel count for our images. If they're going to ping, it's great because ping is a fixed resolution. With a JPEG, you got some variability. We use 192 as a DPI. But, you know, you can create a JPEG image that's 10 megs, and you can create the exact same quality for presentation work at 1920 by 1080, and it can be 1.5 megs. Videos, same exact thing. Somebody could give you that 2 gig video. I can pull it in and transcode it or re-encode it, and I give it some different settings, like keyframe rate. I'm not concerned with the ability to scrub through it, so I'll set that instead of like the default 90 frames. I'll bump it up to 300. So suddenly I can only jump, I got to do math in my head. So 90 would be every 3 seconds you could jump, and 300 would be like every whatever that would be. But it'll drop the file size tremendously.
Bit rate too is something huge to watch out for. Because just a lot of times I've had issues where the video editor is sending me something and it's stuttering, it's not big. And they always say, well, what settings do you want me to use? I'm like, well, I'm not a video guy.
Right.
But bitrate is definitely something to watch out for. I mean, I've gotten like incredibly high bitrate videos. You just don't need it.
And I can't remember the numbers.
I don't even know what that means.
I can't remember the numbers now. What's a good bitrate?
So, was it like 3,000?
Well, it's smaller numbers than that. It's megabits per second. A really, really ridiculously high res video that we would never want is going to have like they're going to average to 15, a bit rate of 15. I'm just going to throw it as numbers that way. And they'll say a maximum of like 24. You want something more along the lines of, I want to average to 6 and a maximum of 8. Those are my numbers I use.
Wait, single digits or are those in thousands?
Those are in thousands. But when you're in video encoder, it just runs it that way. We'll run all the way down to 2 and 4 for small. If it has no audio, we'll drop. I should say that. If it has no audio in it, we'll drop to 2 and 4 because I don't have to worry about the audio quality on the bit rate and things like that. So, yeah, you can take a video. I actually just did this for a proof last week. PowerPoint. Oh, no, it's actually something that's on our blog. It was a video for our blog. PowerPoint exported it as 23 megabytes. I was like, okay, this is ridiculous. It should not be this big. So I pulled it into, I use Adobe Adobe Media Encoder, and I dropped the audio because it had no audio. And then I dropped a couple other things. The frame rate went up to like that 300, and I dropped the bit rate down to 2 and 4. I ended up with a 7.2 megabyte video. Looked identical, but you know,
that's good.
Yeah, there's a lot of technical stuff there that can definitely affect it.
So you use Adobe Media Encoder to...
Adobe Media Encoder, that's what Premiere uses. It's standalone. But I will say, despite what I said earlier, the optimized video built into PowerPoint 2013 and 2016 is really, really good. It does really good. It has a few hiccups, like if you've trimmed a video, it splits it apart because it's trying to be too helpful. Yeah. But that optimizer directly in... PowerPoint, it does a really, really good job. I mean, it's good enough.
I use iSkySoft iMedia Converter Deluxe, which is a sort of video editing for dummies. It's not even really editing. It's mostly converting.
Hey, just as a side tip, Lori used it as well because it rips all DVDs.
That too. Yeah, it does. Yes. It does a lot of good stuff. And it can, a lot of good
stuff.
And
it's economical. It's, you know, I don't know, 20, 30 bucks. I'm just guessing.
We should talk about, getting video. So like you can link video, or actually, yes, you can actually still link video, but you can also, on the PC side, at least, put a YouTube video in, right? You can put, stop breathing heavy. So you can, I'm not going to suggest this. I'm just saying it's possible. You can play a video directly if you have an internet connection directly from the web. The problem with that was the term, were the words, if you have a video connection. So we do not recommend doing that, right?
Well, actually, I don't recommend it. There are plenty of ways to make a video as a local playback. You can search my blog, but I'm not going to, you know, you do want to check the legality and should you do this. But for situations where you want things to work, I think you should put everything in your favor. Here's the actual problem. And I was talking to a couple of the Microsoft. Okay. Keep in. This actually came up because the YouTube playback thing just broke in PowerPoint. Now, I only know it because I read the forums and I'm like watching answers and I'm watching everybody else's. I'm like, it doesn't work. And I went and tested it because I never use it. I don't think it's a good tool. And here was the problem. Microsoft was fine. YouTube changed their rules. Mm-hmm. So all the software developers had to update, and YouTube's making progress. They're evolving as well. But there's a time delay between when YouTube does their change and when the developers make their change to be compatible again. So PowerPoint, when it broke like last year, it wasn't so much that PowerPoint broke. It's just that PowerPoint didn't have the right coding. Now with our new model of, you know, if you're on the subscription, changes can come out quickly, but that was like a hot fix, whatever they call those. It was a hot mess. And, you know, I just don't recommend it because there's too many variables out there.
Yeah. So do everything you can to get that video local. That's the moral.
Exactly. Yes. So let's change direction a little bit. And you guys both have brought this up throughout our conversation. Let's talk about creating videos with PowerPoint.
Yeah. I used to call Keynote the poor man's video editor because we would actually use it for that. You know, when it could do a lot more than PowerPoint. But now you can use PowerPoint for basically editing video. I mean, not doing everything in the world, but if you have some down and dirty needs and don't want to learn Adobe Premiere, you can use it.
Absolutely. Exactly.
Yeah, you can create your slides in PowerPoint, and it's as simple as a click of a button. File, export in PowerPoint 2016 anyway.
And it saves, you have a choice, a WMV or MP4?
Yes.
I think.
Yeah. Yes. MP4 is now the default, but WMV is still there as a backwards legacy option. And you know what?
Go ahead.
So, Sandy, you say it's so simple. I had a client who had videos. They had gotten videos from that, and they wanted to run them back to back. They actually were smart enough. Now, this is just so you say a poor man's video editor. I think that's probably better. I usually say it's like every admin's video editor, because everybody that has a desktop computer has Office, and now they have a video editor. It's just kind of what's there. So I had a client actually do this amazingly smart thing. They put three videos that they had downloaded and could play. They put them onto PowerPoint slides. They weren't using PowerPoint at all for this project, but they used PowerPoint to create this. So they just put the three videos there, and they set the transitions to auto. So they had auto transition with a fade, and then they exported it as a video. So they ended up with one video file with all three videos linked together. I'm like, that's brilliant. And they did it entirely with PowerPoint. So yeah, I thought that was a pretty smart thing. We use video. I mean, PowerPoint is literally, you know, outside being everybody's a video editor, we use it all the time. I mean, we create presentations for video. So here's a little behind the scenes note. We just finished, you know, as year end, we do all these year end videos, thank yous, you know, kind of end of season, start of new year things. A lot of companies send them out. We had a particular one company said, "Hey, can you do this?" And I said, "Absolutely. You know, it's not a problem at all." And basically what it was is this end client had always done a video recap. Well, they didn't have the budget this year for whatever reasons. So they said, the communications firm that we deal with just said, "Fine, we'll do you one in PowerPoint. It'll look really nice, but it won't be as over the top, this and that." Mm-hmm. And so when they gave us the specs, like, "Oh yeah, we can do this and that. And, you know, we'll just drop it into After Effects." And they're like, no, it has to be a PowerPoint file I can hand back to them, because they think they can only afford a PowerPoint file, even though, you know, and I'm like, okay, great. So we did it. And kind of some of the feedback was, "This is looking too nice. It's too video-like. Can you simplify it?" The project was great.
Oh, wow.
It was easy. I mean, we had a lot of problems with Sandy, to go to your point, it actually had thank yous from different people. Mm-hmm. In the past, they've actually flown video at, they've flown a video crew out and done, you know, capturing people saying thank you. This year, they told everybody to do it on their cell phone. We sent very explicit directions with the diagrams on hold the phone this way, wait, click record, then tell everybody, okay, start. So you're already recording. We had this, and all the videos came back really, really nice, but we had this whole thing. They have to be landscape, give us a header and a tail, but we put it in very layman's terms, and it worked out really good.
You know, I kind of the opposite of that thing of, you know, we can only afford PowerPoint. I gave somebody a quote one time for a print project in InDesign, and they said, "Well, how much would it be if we did it in Word?" And I said, "Double."
That's funny.
And it's funny because it's true.
Absolutely true. Oh my gosh.
So one trick I teach for if you want to create your own videos is adding lower thirds. A lower third is that kind of thing you see on the news where like somebody's name comes in and it says, you know, John Smith, CEO of whatever. You can animate that in PowerPoint. You can stylize it because you can put content over video and then export the video again. And now you have a lower third.
That's cool. I like that.
That's a great idea.
You tell me how you crop, then you, you create it in PowerPoint and then crop it after.
Well, you don't have to crop anything. You can play the video full screen and even have to export.
Yeah, you're right.
You don't even have to export to video if you don't want. If you're just playing a video and you want to create your own lower third to identify somebody on the screen or even point something out, you can just animate in a shape and text and animate it out whenever you want. You can even put a trigger on it. So as you're playing the video, if somebody's like, hey, who's that guy? You can hit the trigger and it comes in and then it goes out.
That's very cool.
And you can do it transparent. So it's kind of over the video, but not completely.
True, because you can't do transparent videos, but you can do transparent shapes and elements
over video,
not pictures.
And that's another thing that you couldn't usually do a while ago. It used to be if you would have text over video, the moment the video started playing, it would come to the front and cover everything. So, Troy, in the opening, you said video is the new medium for visual communications. I'll just take 30 seconds to say, obviously, I think video has been around for a while. I think it's still important, but I think in this, we have less and less time to process and read things. So a video still requires that much more attention than a headline or a picture. So, I mean, just speaking from personal experience, if I'm looking, especially if I'm at the office too, that's another thing people don't always realize. People view a lot of things at offices and they can't always listen to audio, which means they can't always get stuff from a video. So one of the smartest things I've seen certain people do when they have video ads, they create them in such a way that you don't need to listen to it. So either the words come up or they're just created in such a way that you can view it without the audio. So that it's always a consideration, in my opinion.
Nolan, I struggle with that too. Personally, I will not watch a video if after 15 seconds or if there's an ad. I just don't have time to go through that. But I have this in the back of my head, talking about millennials, and I think that's where Troy was coming from. People younger than we are have grown up in that environment, and that's what they need to see. So I struggle back and forth with it as well because I can't do the video thing. As far as where I think this is going for PowerPoint, we know that 3D has been announced, so that's, I think that's on a very short horizon as far as us getting that into our PowerPoint presentations, and not far behind that is the concept of virtual and augmented reality. Augmented reality is really going to be the next big thing, I think, in presentations.
I think it's going to be huge.
Yeah,
if you're at the Presentation Summit, one company, the German company, they did that one really cool demo of a presentation in augmented. No, it was virtual reality.
Theirs was virtual.
Yeah, because you couldn't see the real world around you. I think 3D is going to fall into the video type of category. A lot of people are just going to use static 3D images because now you can use it as a file format. But I think motion 3D elements are going to kind of also evolve into a video-like environment and use. Hopefully, it'll be more controllable. So I really think that's going to change and be usable as well. And I should also say that I did this whole talk on video at the Presentation Summit, and I talk a lot about video anyways. But I did do a little a segue saying, video isn't just, hey, here's the video itself. The video can be part of your design. It can be your accent graphics. You can do a lot of things with video that you just can't do with static elements. And again, that's kind of where that 3D space will come in. The little revolving logo right now is a video. You're going to be able to drop it in as a 3D element and say, spin on this axis and use this lighting. So I think that the integration of video into PowerPoint goes well beyond a, hey, let me show you a commercial. Let me show you a video I pulled from YouTube. There are going to be a lot of accent graphics and a lot of, for us, there are a lot of the design elements are actually video elements, but they're just part of the slide design.
Yeah, and I think with so many of the new animation effects, specifically Morph and Zoom, people are going to be using PowerPoint more as an animation program too. I mean, if you want to put it that way. So people will now be able to create tutorials and video infographics and things like that using PowerPoint as the medium and then just export it as a video to put up. So I think we're going to be seeing more of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's going to be huge.
Yeah, you're going to be seeing things and you will have absolutely no idea it was created in PowerPoint because the tools have gotten so much better.
We create a lot of video elements or segments We create a lot of video segments that are given off, handed off to our, you know, video companies. They're like, hey, we need to show this and that, and it's from this content. So we'll actually kind of author it in PowerPoint, export as video, and for them, it's a perfect, they just drop the video in, even though it was completely done in PowerPoint.
Poor man's video editor.
I'm not. Every man's video editor.
But what we're saying is you don't have to pay for After Effects for certain things anymore.
We found it to be faster than After Effects on some projects. We look at it and go, you know what, we can do that in PowerPoint in like, you know, a couple hours versus much more in After Effects. Yeah. So,
you know, I can't believe we're talking about PowerPoint in this context. It's just amazing. It really is.
I'm sure a lot of people can't imagine that either.
Well, to wrap up today, we have had a great conversation, and it's a hard conversation because there are so many directions you can go in, because everybody has a different envisioning of what video is, how reliable video is, what to use video for. You can actually use PowerPoint as your video editor to create videos that maybe have nothing to do with PowerPoint. So it was a fun conversation. Thanks for joining us. I think it was enlightening, and we will throw some show notes together with links to different things, and we look forward to starting 2017 with this episode.
Okay, so my presentation pro tip today is about leveraging presenter view. You know, that's the view where you can see what slide you're on, what the next slide is, and your notes that you might have. And I just wanted to remind everyone that you can really, really use that to your advantage. Oftentimes, you don't need to see it defaults to a very, very large current slide format. You can reduce the size of that to be much smaller in your presenter view. You can reduce the size of the next slide, and this is why I think this is important. You can make your notes very, very large to fit either your computer screen, if you're presenting from a computer in front of you at a podium, or confidence monitors that may be in front of you. As a presenter, presenter view allows you to see your notes in an enlarged format and really help you along with your presentation.
Very cool.
Nice. So my tip is an image tip, although I guess you could do this for a video as well, now that I think about it. So you can create a duotone. A duotone is the term for basically using one color or one shade of a color to color a whole image. And in PowerPoint, it's called recoloring the image. So the defaults are you pull down the recolor, and it gives you the defaults based on your color palette. And there are sort of two versions for each color. Often they're fine, but you can get slightly different results and have a little more control if you turn your photo grayscale and then take a semi-transparent rectangle and put it over the image. So now the image is kind of like it is bleeding through the image, and you can adjust the transparency to get different effects. And that's actually the technique I use probably more when I want to use an image, a duotone image, as a background, just because I find sometimes the default ones, the recolors, aren't quite what I want.
They're so, too again, strong. Your contrast is too high. It's really hard to adjust.
Your blacks are still black. Yep. So yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's another option for coloring images if you want.
Another evolution of PowerPoint to be able to handle those. Mm-hmm. Type of needs. That's awesome. So my presentation pro tip is I'm going to tag onto something I thought about from our conversation that I didn't get in there. And that is that you can make a PowerPoint slide any size you want. So the defaults are, is it going to be a 16:9 aspect ratio? And here's the inches that create that. Or is it going to be a 4:3, the more legacy square? And here's the inches that create that. But you can make a PowerPoint slide any size you want. Now, our normal use of that is kind of like on these ultra wide presentations where it's going to be the equivalent of 3 to 6 projectors wide. So we'll create these. Now there is a limitation. 54 inches is the max width. Max dimension. You can go in any direction. But so we'll create these presentations that are 50 inches wide by 9 inches tall. So they're just super, super long, you know, to work out to be something, you know, like 10,000 pixels by 1080. But the other thing you can do is to go along with this conversation is creating those lower thirds, Nolan, you were talking about. Mm-hmm. I just thought about this. We created a whole slide deck, but we made it a very long, thin rectangle. And the whole goal of this presentation, or the slides, I should say, was to export videos for lower thirds. They were animated. So we created this just long, thin one, and we filled it with the bar we wanted. Then we animated on the text, and we actually animated off the text. And then we exported it as a video, and the video guys just took it in. They took the segments for each naming title. And what it was is we didn't have the titles of all the presenters for a meeting until they actually got there. So to hand it off to a video editor or have a video editor standing by was going to be a problem from a timing. I was like, okay, here's what we can do. I can create this custom size. Give me the pixels. I'll just type them in, or I'll let them type them in. That way They're responsible for their credentials, seeing how they didn't supply them. And I'll just export a video really quick. I'll give it to you, and it'll be this, you know, custom size. You can drop it in. So yeah, custom sizing a PowerPoint slide to any page size you need.
That's what I thought Nolan was describing when he was talking about lower thirds.
And I did too, and that's why I thought about it. But
there you go.
But doing a live lower third is actually totally a phenomenal way to go about it. Yeah. Okay, so I'll carry us through on tech tips. Just anything we think is cool out there in technology, software. It doesn't have to relate to presentations. It's just cool stuff. And I'm going to go with one. I'm actually going legacy because we're making a transition at our office. I am done with wireless keyboards and mice.
Yes.
The battery life isn't the factor, although you always have to change the batteries out after. I mean, it's a long duration, 12, 18 months, whatever you change out your batteries. But it never seems to be convenient enough. We're always moving the little receiver around if it's on a cord or, you know, anyways, we're just kind of done with wireless. And I'm going to gaming keyboards and mice that are wired. One, they're much easier to type on because they have really responsive, the keyboards have much nicer. Oh, what's the name? What do you call it when the keys go up and down? I can't think of it. But
I don't know.
The mechanism that works for the keyboard is longer lasting. They're made for, you know, gamers to punch on it 100 times. And it just works better. I've been using one at my office. At the studio itself, I've been using a gaming keyboard I picked up and a mouse, and it's just this really funky one. But you know what? I love it. I come to my home office and I've got these really nice. Actually, I use a Microsoft keyboard and mouse, and they're phenomenal until they get into about a year old. And then I'm like, you know, this is really, my typing is slower and noisier. So my tech tip is we're going all wired gaming mice and keyboards for all the design team.
I use a wired Apple keyboard as opposed to the wireless one.
And those are beautiful to type
on. Because it has, mostly because it has the number pad.
Yes.
And
yes.
The wireless one does not.
Oh.
You're right. I actually had to think about that because the wireless one's that little one with the, oh.
Yeah. So I need my number pad. And actually, I was just playing with one of the new MacBook Pros, and the keyboard is terrible.
Uh-oh.
It's noisy and it's terrible. I mean, and believe me, if that is the worst thing about that computer, all right, we're not going to get into that.
I had the exact same reaction, just as a side note. We went to the Apple store. I'm like, you know, this is like just above typing on an iPad to me. There's just no movement.
Terrible.
Okay.
That's funny.
Anyway.
Okay. Well, my tech tip is around a VR app that I use on my Galaxy Note 5. If you know, I don't know for you folks out there that have the Galaxies, you can put them in the actual phone in the Oculus Rift VR lens camera. Is that what is it called? A VR lens?
Well, Microsoft has the HoloLens.
Well,
I think they're
exactly.
Picking up,
that's HoloLens. But so you literally
the plug alien your, headset.
The alien headset. You plug it into the Oculus Rift, the other versions of Oculus. There's also the cardboard, the little cardboard ones. And there's a VR app called Within. And it's a nice curated collection of video for Galaxy, for your Android phones. And also, I follow a newsletter called Inside VR and AR. And it's just my way of trying to keep up on what's going on in the industry. You know, it's far beyond what we're doing. But
you are so high tech.
I know. I'm very impressed.
No, I'm not. That's why I have to do it. It helps anyway.
Cool. All right. Well, my tech tip is, I don't think I've mentioned it before, FreshBooks, which is my online invoicing software. It is not accounting software. It's not QuickBooks. But for my purposes, I just need really good expense tracking and invoicing software. And It is awesome. It's just, I handle it all myself. Things are automatic. You can automate things. It's I love it. I think it's a great, great company and a great product. You can put in time tracking. You can have other people put in their time tracking that gets automatically applied to invoices. You can do proposals and it sends out late reminders automatically. And, nice. You know, I don't use everything, but I use just sort of the basics and it's phenomenal.
Nice.
Better than an Excel spreadsheet.
Yes, indeed.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a design studio team focused on presentation design. If you're looking for presentation messaging design or show site graphics ops that are real presentation designers, check us out at www.tlccreative.com and my blog, now in its 11th year as of this week, thepowerpointblog.com.
This is Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my relatively young blog, presentyourstory.com. It's not 11. I don't know how old it is. You can get lots of free goodies and downloads there. And if you're interested in on-site training, customized training in data visualization or presentation, give me a holler.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website at presentationwhiz.biz, my blog at pptwhizblog, and the Presentation Guild website at presentationguild.org. Or just search for Sandra Johnson PowerPoint in your web browser and you'll learn all kinds of things about me.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.